What's going on? Welcome in here. Hour number, boy, I can't believe that was already an hour, but hour number two of the Abe TL show coming to you live from Murph's, and the doors are now open. Looks like we're getting working on getting Wimbledon turned on here, and we've got a couple people already posted up at the bar. It's not too hot yet, but you're going to want to get in here a little bit later, certainly to escape the heat at some point. So welcome in. If you're coming down here to the Cobb Galleria, taking in the All-Star Village, come say hi. It's Abe Gordon here till 1 o'clock. We're going to have Andy and Randy on a little bit later from 1 to 4. And then to wrap up the live at Murph's portion of the broadcast day from the Diamond with a special live show here from 4 to 6 p.m. as well. You got my guy Bo Johnson on after that, the Bo Johnson Experience from 6 to 7:30. Fascinated to see where he goes with the Braves and the All-Star game, but also WWE in town and all sorts of stuff that I know Bo's got on his mind. Not to mention we're not that far from football season, and Bo Johnson, the fantasy guy, one of them. I keep it quiet that I'm actually pretty good at fantasy football. I keep it pretty quiet. I just, it is what it is. So I'll let Bo be the fantasy guy for your needs, but, you know, if you really do need some, let me know. Anyways, we've also got a special broadcast of Atlanta United 2 tonight. Madison Cruz and Jason Longshore at 7:30. They're taking on the Columbus Crew, too, as well. So come on down to Murph's. Again, the doors are now open, and they are getting ready for what I imagine will be a pretty big crowd here in the Galleria area. All-Star Village is going on. If you're trying to get down here early. It's going to be packed. It already was packed, but it's certainly going to be even more packed as the day goes on. An opportunity for some meet and greets, an opportunity for some participation there at All-Star Village, and certainly an opportunity, as they would prefer, for you to visit the souvenir shop, because they have taken T-shirts that are $20 and placed a one in front of that 20. And that's how it rolls here, because they changed the logo just a little bit. All right, a couple of interesting pieces of news and notes that are coming through over the course of the day. We talked about it just a moment ago. Daisbell Hernandez being optioned down to AAA Gwinnett. It just got to a point where the control issues are too big of a problem. And Brian Snitker sends him down, see if they can get that figured out. Some good news for Georgia baseball. UGA just hearing within the last 30 minutes that Trey Phelps is coming back for another season. Trey Phelps, one of the faces of this Georgia team, 305, 10 bombs, 44 ribbies in 2025, and a really exciting, electric, athletic player in Trey Phelps. So he is back for another year of college at Georgia. All right. This is the portion of the season where we haven't quite got to the NFL. I know it's kind of right on the precipice there, but still a week and a half away from training camp. The Atlanta Hawks obviously have had a fun offseason. They're in summer league, but their season's not really going on right now. There are two teams in Atlanta that do have active seasons, and unfortunately, neither of them are going the way that their combined, joined, or respective fan bases had hoped for. Of course, we're talking about the Atlanta Braves, but also about Atlanta United. And I find it fascinating how similar I think these letdown seasons have been for both of these teams. I think you look at them, and if you had Atlanta Braves on one side and Atlanta United on one side, you had the topic in the middle, and you just put an X by which one it applied to, and it can apply to both at times or just one. I think you're going to see a lot of it that apply to both. I think for the Braves, you look at what they had. You knew you were going to be without Strider and Acuna for a little bit, but certainly Vegas felt this way. I think you look at preseason power rankings. The Braves had expectations to come in and compete for a championship. And I think similarly, you talk to people in MLS, and the Atlanta United, after spending $50-something million in the offseason to add Lotte Loth, to bring back Miguel Almiron and a couple other pieces, that they made moves for. I think people thought that Atlanta United was primed for a run to be competitive, potentially a contender for a championship. So when you look at those two aspects of the Braves and United seasons, both had expectations to compete for a championship, and neither one is anywhere close. I think, again, when you compare what's gone wrong for each team, and yes, there are some injury discussions. We'll talk about that in a moment. But the biggest fall off, the biggest reason the teams are not competitive in a manner in which you felt they could be, has come from the offensive perspective. There's no doubt about the concerns the Braves have had at offense, and I think you look at Atlanta United. Some people said they were going to have the most potent offense outside of Inter Miami in the entire MLS, and that is certainly not the case. So again, both of these teams, the Atlanta Braves and the Atlanta United, in disappointing seasons, having serious letdowns on the offensive side of things. I think you can blame injuries if you want. Certainly in the rotation for the Atlanta Braves, we talked about all the starting arms that have come and went this season for the Braves, and some may return, but Chris Sale is out. Spencer Schwellenbach is out. Ronaldo Lopez is out. A.J. Smith-Shawver is out. And while we do have Strider right now, he has missed a number of outings earlier in the season as well. For United, injuries in the defense, injuries in the midfield have really cost you. Steon Gregerson has been gone the majority of the season. You lost Jay Fortune more recently for the rest of the year. Tristan Moyamba, who's having and was having his best season, missed a number of games, and the list goes on and on. Derek Williams is out with a foot injury. So both teams dealing with injuries that maybe cost you a little bit of top-end performance. Fan base frustration with a coach or manager. You can put the X on both sides of that, both for the Braves and for Atlanta United. I think you've seen both fan bases suggested firing the coach or firing the manager, moving on, bringing in a new voice as a potential fix. I think it comes down to the players, in my opinion, in terms of both aspects. Can a manager, maybe coaching change across the board for the Braves, do a little bit in terms of boosting the offense? Sure, a little bit, but I certainly don't think they are to blame for what is going on this year, and I absolutely feel that way for Ronnie Dyla. You've got players who are not living up to expected performance. I don't think it's a tactics move. I don't think it's a formation thing. They've tried different formations. They've tried different tactics. Players still aren't being dangerous, especially at the top there. So I think that is a big, big problem. And now we get to, what's the goal for the rest of the season for each team? In my opinion, it's not the playoffs. I think for both teams, and look, neither team's eliminated. Both teams have a portion or a sect of fans that are kind of hanging on to, we can make a run and this and that. And, you know, while I don't see it for either team, the goal for me for the rest of the season is, okay, how do we build for 2026? In terms of the Braves, it's trying to find a way to get Michael Harris and Ozzie Albies going. And if you're not going to get them going, what's the plan? And financially, there's a path away from Ozzie Albies, if that is the choice. Probably not for Michael Harris. And so for me, when you look at it, if you're going to be buyers at the deadline, if you're going to be sellers at the deadline, in my opinion, it is all about doing so with 2026 in mind. And of course, same thing for the MLS. We talked about MLB trade deadline. If you're moving on from Raisel Iglesias or Marcell Ozuna or Pierce Johnson or whomever it may be, it's not to bring someone in that's going to help you right now. It's going to bring someone in that's going to help you either in future years or specifically next year. Try and reload a farm system that is not completely empty, but very, very shallow in terms of major league talent. And we've heard from Atlanta United and Chris Henderson, they want to be active at the MLS transfer window. I just have a tough time arguing it's for this season. I think it's about building some momentum to head into next season. I think both the Braves and Atlanta United are very, very similar in these aspects. And so it's incredibly frustrating because if you would have asked me before the year in regards to both of these teams, Atlanta Braves and Atlanta United, I would have sat here and said, for both of them, hey, I expect them to be in the picture. I expect them to be right up there for Atlanta United with Columbus or with Nashville, with Inter Miami. That is not the case. And when it came to the Braves, I would have sat here and said, they're going to be in a dogfight all year long. I know the Mets are good. The Mets have spent money. I know the Phillies are good. The Phillies have spent money. But I just trust what the Braves had. They're going to be competitive. And it just simply has not been the case for either team. It's been an incredibly frustrating season for both. Wins are scarce, few and far between. And unfortunately, the comparisons we're making between the Braves and Atlanta United are way too all in one direction. All on the negative. But I do think they're similar. I really do think they have had similar seasons, similar frustrations from the fan base, similar expectations, similar issues from an injury perspective, similar letdowns from an offensive perspective. And now the question for both is how do you make sure, and this is going to be a discussion we continue to have for the Braves as their season rolls on, and also for United. How do you make sure what happened in 2025 doesn't happen again in 2026? Now, for Atlanta United, there's potential of a lot more turnover, a lot more change on the field. And that's its own discussion, right? It's pretty common that in MLS, you're replacing four or five, maybe more starters every single season. That's just how the numbers roll. Major League Baseball, you look at the Braves roster, I just don't know if that's possible. You're probably replacing a manager, in my opinion. I think Brian Snicker retires at the end of this year, although I don't have any sources or confidants in that. That's just a gut feel from me. So both teams could be replacing different things. Atlanta Braves could be replacing a manager, maybe part of a coaching staff. Atlanta United, I think they're not replacing a manager, but they could be replacing a majority of players. And we'll see that. You have a in-season transfer window that starts in a couple of weeks, and then the other transfer window in winter as well. So could be some serious changes on the field for Atlanta United. I do not expect that from the Atlanta Braves. Taking to the field, not that far from now, are going to be the Atlanta Falcons. We're less than 2 weeks away from training camp. Going to share some Falcons thoughts on coming in. Expectations for Michael Penix. I thought Andy and Randy made a fascinating point with Joe Patrick the other day in regards to the expectations for Michael Penix and the hype surrounding him. I'm going to replay some of those comments from Joe Patrick, let you hear that and react to that as well. That's all coming your way next. The Abe TL Show continues. We're live at Murph's. The doors are open, so come on and hang out. Going to be here till 1. Andy and Randy, follow me right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome in to the Abe TL Show. Abe Gordon here live at Murph's. 11:22 on a Sunday morning. Breakfast at Wimbledon is off and running. The men's final between Jannik Sinner, Carlos Alcaraz is underway. Alcaraz looks like he's going to probably take the first game, hold serve, and we are off and running there at Wimbledon. So there you go. I'm going to be keeping my eye on this. Obviously, a little bit of a letdown yesterday from Anisimova against Iga Swiatek. Probably was always going to be tough, but really wasn't even manage any momentum, much of a fight in that one. So there you go. But you guys know me. I love all this stuff, and certainly Wimbledon is towards the top of the heap when it comes to that. Falcons going to be getting going in the next week and a half, or what, 10 days from the team's reporting. Players reporting, and I think our first day out there is the 24th. So just over a week and a half before Falcons training camp returns to Flowery Branch. A couple of things. Obviously, the fans are back this year in regards to being able to come out and sit up on that hill and park across the street and take in all that the Falcons have to offer for training camp. And 92.9 The Game is going to be out there as well. Looking forward to it. Really looking forward to seeing you guys out there again last year. I'm not going to lie. When you weren't, the fans weren't there last year, it was nice to be able to sit in the air conditioning. I will not hide away from that fact. But it didn't feel the same. And so we'll have, like we do and have in previous years, we'll get our whole setup, the tent, and we'll have everyone going to be out there at training camp. And, of course, we'll have Duke Sumbel just down the road at the Taj Mahooters as well. So a lot going on, and we're getting ready for training camp. Again, talked about it at the start here in regards to the quarterback series on Netflix and the release and the fan reaction, and a lot of it was kind of just bringing back up what had already been felt, what had already been said. And again, from the series perspective, it just wasn't new, in my opinion. There just wasn't anything in Atlanta we didn't already know. I do imagine that there are people in other NFL cities that are probably sitting there thinking like, whoa, I can't believe this is what happened in Atlanta, and I can't believe that this is what went through Kirk Cousins. And like that, none of it was new to us. Like, if you want to fight the good fight and be like, he was struggling, this or that, like, fine. Like, no. At the time, we said something's wrong, he's probably hurt. We didn't have proof. I guess this was proof that he was hurt, right? There was a little bit of confirmation, but we already knew. I'm not going to sit here and hide behind injury reports and press conference comments and none of that crap. We knew he was hurt. You don't have to pretend. You don't have to take up the memo line from the squad. We knew he was hurt. And so nothing in the series to me was new. That's why I'm not really like, I'm not going to ramp up my furor, my anger again. I felt the same way I felt in I don't remember exactly, week 10, week 11, week 12. You know, nothing changed. But I think the good news is it came out just early enough that you're going to separate it now from training camp. I think the emotions have come and probably at this point already went. I know Turtle at night has said, hey, we're going to talk about this and we're going to move on. I don't want to talk about Kirk Cousins anymore. And he's right. And we talked about it in the same manner when I was with Carl Dukes. We did our one day and said, hey, Carl asked me, he said, Abe, you done with the cousin stuff? I was like, man, I stayed up all night to watch it. I don't know if it was worth it for one show, but yeah, I'm done with it. And we move forward. And why is that? Because this is now about Michael Penix. The focus is ahead. For the Atlanta Falcons. Michael Penix is an unquestioned QB1. He's going to be taking the first team reps in practice, and this is what the season is going to be. Now, I have been, I don't even want to say critical about Michael Penix. That's not the right word. I've been a little bit more hesitant than many of the Falcons fans in the area, even than many right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I just sit there and I say, hey, he is a guy that has had three games, and I think he showcased quite a lot of good in those three games. I'm also not going to ignore that he showcased quite a lot of bad in those three games. There were a number of turnover-worthy throws in those instances, and I know not all of the turnovers there were on him, but I just think with only three games played, there are still going to be some speed bumps, and there are going to be some setbacks, and there's going to be some learning moments and stuff like that. And so I think even though I'm critical and a little bit slow-rolling concerned about Michael Penix, I think he's got everything he needs to be a franchise quarterback. I think he's got everything he needs to succeed in the NFL. And I think the good news is the Atlanta Falcons don't necessarily need him to be one of the top seven quarterbacks in the NFL. I think if you get a top 15 level performance out of Michael Penix, a top 12 level performance out of Michael Penix, you're doing everything you expect to do this season, which includes winning 10 games, winning the NFC South, and being dangerous in the playoffs. I just don't think you need him to be one of the three best quarterbacks in the league to have success this season. And I think that's the good news. You don't need him to do everything and everything for this team. But I do just take it with a little bit of hesitancy. And Atlanta Falcons insider here on 92.9 The Game, Joe Patrick, he joins the midday show along with many of the other shows. But he joins the midday show every Friday at 11:40. And Andy and Randy were talking with him, and Andy had a question kind of similar to where my mindset is, especially coming off of quarterback and coming off of list season and where guys are placing him, and more specifically coming right off of that interview with Mike Vick, right? They released it on 7-9. You can figure it out, 7-9. A lot of people were just like so hot and heavy about, you hear this guy, this is my quarterback, this is my franchise, blah, 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 blah. And I don't necessarily disagree with them, but like I said, I'm a little bit more hesitant than many. Here's how a discussion about Michael Penix heading into this season sounded when Joe Patrick joined the midday show on Friday.
I'm going to be prone to get over my skis with him as much as anybody, given where he went to school and the success that he had. But, like, it just feels a little bit like with a guy who's really going to be a starter for the first time, essentially a rookie in the NFL, we've gone from the expectation being somewhat reasonable to it almost feels like he may be getting overhyped heading into this season. Is that, are you feeling some of that, or am I just being cautious?
Locally, for sure, and with Falcons fans, I think for sure. And I will hold my hand up, Andy, in that I am basically, I feel like I'm as optimistic as pretty much anybody about him, because I feel like he's got so many things going for him, least of which, by the way, is his general personality and demeanor, which I think is perfect for, like, the quarterback position and just how kind of, I don't want to say nonchalant necessarily, but he's not he's just very focused guy and very professional, right, in the way he goes about things, and that's exactly what you want to see. If you look at national media, they kind of treat him still as like a pure question mark, which I think is like not giving him enough credit for the things that he was able to show last year, again, in the small sample size, but in having literally zero reps with any of those guys until the Wednesday before that Giants game in practice. So, there's a lot of optimism because he has all these raw tools that we saw on display in those three games. But there's certainly going to be a learning experience for him this year. And I kind of see this season going for him generally as a lot of big plays, but also probably a lot of, you know, boneheaded interceptions and maybe pushing the boundaries a little bit too far.
Welcome back in to Murph's, the Abe TL Show. Abe Gordon hanging out here. A little bit of a setback. Someone kicked a cord in the back. And that's why we're still waiting on those scientists to make everything wireless. Because we're still in a little hookup. But welcome back into the program. We had heard Andy and Randy chatting with Joe Patrick about the pressure on Michael Penix and the hype and what he needs to accomplish this season. And I think the most important aspect is that it's not going to be all on him. I do find it fascinating, though, the differences between how people feel about him here in Atlanta and how you see him in terms of rankings and other lists, but also not just in regards to him, in regards to other quarterbacks. Like, in no world, and I'm not saying that Penix is necessarily better than some of these guys, but in no world can I sit here and vote or suggest any of the rookie quarterbacks are better than Michael Penix, nor can I sit here and say J.J. McCarthy is where he needs to be and that Michael Penix isn't. And so I just think there's a huge list of guys that have question marks, kind of unknowns next to their name. I think we've seen a little bit from Penix, and I'd like to see a little bit more. But there's certainly no overstating how significant being QB1 into training camp is going to be for him, getting an opportunity to take all the reps, getting on the same page with his teammates, stuff like that. So really looking forward to seeing what Michael Penix can accomplish. But I am a little bit concerned about the hype train in regards to him. I think the good news is that he does seem grounded. He does seem down to earth. It's not going to impact him, affect him, and he'll be ready to go. Now, one team that doesn't seem to be getting the hype that I expected them to get are the Georgia Bulldogs. And I want to welcome Garrett Chapman back into the program here as well. G is doing a great job back in studio. And obviously Garrett and I have conversed quite a bit about college football over the last couple of years, couple of seasons on College Football Game Time. Also the short-lived podcast that we did together. Looking forward to being not just with him at SEC Media Days, but also back on College Football Game Time, although I will be partnering up with the Frickster, John Fricke,
Hey-o.
This season. But despite my hesitation in regards to Michael Penix, just to prove that I can get over my skis as much as the next man or woman as well, I don't understand why the Georgia Bulldogs aren't getting a lot more hype. And it just seems to me like there's so many that are hesitant to call Georgia the favorite in the SEC. And I'm just not one of them. And I try to break it down. Is this about Georgia? Is this about other teams? And we'll get into some question marks that Georgia does certainly have in a moment. But I just have a tough time buying into the other programs that are supposed to be knocking Georgia off that pedestal. I just – the craziness of placing Texas there right now for me is a huge, huge leap. I do not buy Texas yet. Arch Manning, I get it. You want to build a hype train. Very similar to Michael Penix, we've seen very, very little of Arch Manning, and I'm just not entirely sold that he is the next coming at the quarterback position. But it's not really just about him either. I think Texas has lost a lot more talent than people are giving notice for. They've lost a ton on both the offensive and defensive line and significant weapons for Arch Manning. Obviously, a number of receivers went to the NFL draft, tight end as well. So I don't know. I'm just slow rolling Texas a little bit. I'm also not entirely sold on their head coach as compared to Kirby Smart. And that brings me to the other team that we're just going to talk about them blindly like they're here to knock off the Georgia Bulldogs. And I understand that Georgia has had issues. Kirby Smart has had issues beating Tennessee. But I don't know if I trust Kalen DeBoer. The fact that they're not bringing quarterback to SEC Media Days gives me a lot more hesitation than it probably should. Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard, they got some weapons on the outside. They can beat you deep. There's no doubt about that. But I just have some hesitation saying they're ready to jump up and beat the Georgia Bulldogs, and then we get into, and I know Garrett and I spent a quick moment on LSU. They have the quarterback. What else do they have there? I don't know if Ole Miss and South Carolina are going to repeat the efforts that they had. I think Ole Miss is replacing 17 starters potentially, and I just don't know if South Carolina, the hype train for Lenora Sellers is crazy, and I'm just not sure I buy it a second straight year in the SEC. So part of this for me is like, all right, why am I supposed to believe that any of these teams are going to be jump up and grab Georgia and be better than them? And then a lot of it also is, all right, so maybe it's not about these teams have passed Georgia, but maybe Georgia has fallen back to the pack. I think for a lot of people, that's probably where they fall. I just find that tough to believe. I understand Georgia's got question marks. So why do I trust that they'll be fine? It starts and ends, to me, with Kirby Smart. I just think – and not just Kirby, by the way. Let's give credit to his entire coaching staff. I just think they're going to be fine along the lines, despite currently not having a projected first-round pick. I think you've got some a decent amount of upperclassmen on the O-line with Drew Bobo, Ernest Green, Monroe Freeling, Micah Morris. They've been learning. They've been building behind first-round draft picks, behind NFL talent. I just think they're going to be fine. And then I think there's going to be someone jumping out on the front end that will get into the first round. I don't know if it's Christian Miller, C.J. Allen, Nasir Johnson, Gabe Harris. I just think someone is going to get there. And despite having first-round talent last year along the offensive line in Walker, and Mykel Williams up front, they weren't necessarily that impactful over the course of the season. Obviously, Walker had some huge games against the Texas Longhorns. But over the course of the season, this was not a dominant Georgia front. And so I don't think that taking a step back even talent-wise means that the impact of the front is going to take a step back. The other thing for me, which I think is an upgrade, is at playmaker. I think we've seen last year with Carson Beck, and we'll talk about that in a moment, I think we've seen how Georgia has operated when they don't really have a go-to playmaker. And you could try and force a couple of guys in there and say, this is the guy, this is the security blanket. Not really. Not really. And I just think they have obviously made it a focal point of the offseason, both in recruiting and specifically in the transfer portal. You got Oscar Delp and Zachariah Branch and C.J. Wiley and Taylen Taylor and Dylan Bell and Noah Thomas, and some of those guys are new into the program, either, again, as a transfer or as a recruit. I just think that people look at this Georgia receiving room, including the tight ends, and say, this is potential to be one of the more talented units that they have had in a long time. And I know, obviously, Brock Bowers was Brock Bowers, and that was kind of its own discussion. But as a group, as a unit, I just think they're going to find some playmakers that are going to be able to do things that Georgia really wasn't able to do in previous seasons. And we saw with a relatively fading Carson Beck how competitive UGA was still able to be. And that's the other thing. I just don't know what, again, similar to the Atlanta Falcons, where you don't need Michael Penix to be that good to win games. We saw with Carson Beck in just kind of an average performance how good Georgia could be last year. I think you're just asking for that from Gunnar Stockton. Just be smart. Don't put the ball in trouble and let guys do the thing. I think it's a unproven but a deeper running back room than they've had in recent years, and obviously that will be determined by whether or not they can stay healthy. But Garrett, I want to bring you in at this point on this as well. I don't know, man. I get it. I'm sure Texas will be the favorite coming out of the SEC if they do a preseason poll, something that the Big 12 has nixed, and we can get into that a little bit later. I get why Texas will be the favorite. I assume Georgia will be right behind them, but probably pretty close with LSU and Alabama, maybe even South Carolina. I just am still much higher on the Georgia Bulldogs than it seems most people are.
Yeah, it's because Kirby Smart's there. I mean, ultimately, it starts and finishes with the fact that he's the best coach in college football. Full stop, you know? And Steve Sarkisian's a great coach. I think Steve Sarkisian's going to have a great tenure at Texas. He's going to have a good season this year. But we also have to remember that they beat Texas twice last year, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's – it's a situation that I feel like a lot of people have conveniently forgotten. And they've crowned Arch Manning, and I haven't seen enough from Arch Manning to really think that he's necessarily the second coming of like a Heisman Trophy type of guy. You know, Peyton was a really good quarterback. Eli was a really good quarterback. Arch has a really good last name, and he may end up being a very good quarterback. I don't know, but the thing is, I don't think that we need to be saying that he's the best quarterback in the SEC when he has started three games, I think, total in his college football career, and he was good, but I think the expectations are just massive for him, and you need him to be at this super high level. But I don't know. They lost some playmakers, too, over there at Texas, and I think they're going to be a good team. Again, I'll say it again. They're going to be a good team. But as far as where they are as the kingpin of the SEC, they haven't done anything. They played in an SEC championship game, and that's about it.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for a team that would scare me if I were the Georgia Bulldogs, it is, unfortunately, last year's defending champion, the Ohio State Buckeyes. I think that's a team who returns the best player in offense in college football, in the receiver Jeremiah Smith, and possibly the best player in defense, in youngster right around here, in Caleb Downs. It's just that team's loaded all over the place. Now, they've got some questions at quarterback as well that they're going to have to solve, as does Georgia, as does Texas. You know, everyone's trying to get in on Penn State, and that's fine. But until they win that one, I'm not so sure about it. And so I just am not ready to hand the SEC over from Georgia to another team. Not saying that Texas can't take it from them. Not saying Alabama can't take it from them. Those playmakers gave Georgia a ton of issues last year, and they're most of them are back this year for Alabama. If they get the quarterback situation settled, it could be a huge second season for Kalen DeBoer. But I'm just not necessarily sold on that just yet. A couple things I want to get into alongside the SEC Media Days and the Georgia Bulldogs. The Atlanta Braves play the final game of their pre-All-Star break portion of the season today at 2:15. It is going to be Davis Daniel getting the start today. Another bullpen game for the Atlanta Braves, and obviously you can afford to do that right now, mix and match and be short, because you're set up with the All-Star break here in town. And so you're going to run out whatever arms you need to run out. There's no doubt about that. But Davis Daniel was just activated yesterday. Austin Cox sent down. And the other aspect that we meant to touch on a little bit earlier but didn't have an opportunity to, Ronald Acuña Jr., moved down in the lineup, and he's there again today, batting third behind Jurickson Profar, behind Matt Olson, ahead of Sean Murphy. And Sean Murphy's obviously on a hot streak right now. You may not want to pitch around Acuña, because Murphy's probably just as likely to take you deep as Ronnie is. But Acuña did hit a first-inning home run yesterday. It just wasn't leadoff. It was from the three-hole. And obviously, trying to get Profar on base, trying to get Matt Olson on base, and then let Acuña do some damage behind them. It's something we haven't seen from Acuña in quite a long time, really significantly earlier in his career, the last time he wasn't batting leadoff. And we've talked about it, whether it's a comfort level, whether it's a preference, all of that stuff. But this is a team that's in desperate need of offense. And as suggested in the last couple of weeks here, if Acuña's not going to run the way that he had been running before, obviously not that far from a 70-steal season, he's got a couple, and we've seen him run a little bit more, but not a ton. If he's not really going to play on the bases and really take the focus of the pitcher right now, he really might be more valuable in that three-hole. If it's all about pure hitting and driving the ball to all fields and moving runners around the bases, stuff like that. And so we'll keep an eye from that perspective, both today and then post-All-Star break as well. Nacho Alvarez back in there at third base. Austin Riley hit the 10-day IL with the abdomen issue. And so Nacho had a couple of base knocks the other day. He's getting to start there at third base. You got, again, Marcelo Zuna with another day off today. You've got Sean Murphy at DH with Drake Baldwin catching today. So, again, that game's going to be at 2:15 as the Braves wrap up. Again, you know, portion of their season, first half as well. Interesting note just came out from Evan Woodbury, who covers Major League Baseball for the Detroit Tigers. Fascinating conversation, but Tariq Skubal and Max Fried had a conversation over the past couple of days. And Skubal essentially offered Max Fried an opportunity to start the All-Star game. Fried, obviously, a lengthy career here in Atlanta, beloved here in Atlanta, but just kind of the guy that Max Fried is said, hey, man, like, I appreciate it. I acknowledge the offer, but you've had too good a season. It is your start. And so two really respectful guys, professional conversation. You like to see stuff like that in Major League Baseball, and I'm excited about it. The All-Star game right here on Tuesday, just across the walkway at Truist, and it's going to be Paul Skeens for the National League, Tariq Skubal there for the American League. All right, when we come back, I try and do it every time I host the show, every time the Abe TL show is on the air. We're going to go outside the perimeter. Some of the top national sports stories, headlines, and topics. One or two we've already touched on, and a couple new ones as well. Hour number two is in the books. I can't believe it is going this fast. our number three coming your way. Also coming your way, Andy and Randy starting at one, and Grant McCauley at four. We're all here at Murph's. We got Fozuna in the building. I see him over there looking sharp as always. So come hang out with us at Murph's if you make your way down to All-Star Village. Looking forward to meeting anyone and everyone who comes in and says hello. All right, when we come back, we will go outside the perimeter. It's the Abe TL Show. Abe Gordon, live at Murph's on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.